This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our August 23rd, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, this show is for you. Show is about helping you make the most of your time and your money and helping you become an above average investor. Now, this is an open forum and everyone is welcome to call. You know, I have things that I can discuss, but ultimately it's about you. And whether you're new to investing or have years of experience, all kinds of money related questions are welcome. So we try to answer your questions live during our 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. Or you can always leave your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T, 888-992-4278. And we'll get to those calls in a moment. But today, we're going to talk about how smart investors place importance on history, not pie-in-the-sky promises. And an overwhelming majority of ETF assets are allocated to strategies with at least 10-year track records, ones that go back a decade plus. So the question is your ETF battle tested? And what does that mean for maybe the next bear market, if it is or isn't? So that's our main talking point today, and I have some others as well. But before we go any further, let's check that 24-hour listener line right now. It's open for your questions anytime you want to. Ask them at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. I am calling in regards to REITs and wanted to get your opinion on whether or not REITs would be a good investment for Roth IRA or a rollover IRA. And taxes are not going to be an issue. I'm going to be in low tax bracket. So I wanted to see what you think, and I'll be listening for the answer on your show. Thank you.
All right. REITs within an IRA or a Roth IRA. That's REITs are fine investments. I talked on Monday about the tax differences between of REITs. REIT income, REIT is a real estate investment trust. Their dividends, it's a pass-through entity. So what happens is if they pay out 90% or more of their income, then they aren't taxed at the corporate level, but you as an individual are taxed at your ordinary income tax rate if it's held in a taxable account. If it is not held in a taxable account, in an IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, etc., then you don't pay tax on that income until you take that money out down the line. So it's REITs are good to be held within tax-deferred vehicles like I talked about on Monday. Now, the question in today's market is that which REITs are you investing in? The real estate market, you know, REITs are typically invested in office buildings, retail properties. So there's been a lot more REITs now that hold individual homes to rent out since the financial crisis. There have been some of those popping up. Some of them buy bonds, mortgage bonds, and they invest in real estate through that way. Some invest in technology assets like server farm buildings and things like that. Some of them invest in industrial complexes. So there are REITs in many, many different types of sectors. There's healthcare REITs that focus on healthcare office buildings and nursing homes and things like that. So there's a lot of different types of real estate investment trusts out there. Not a huge fan of retail REITs for the longer term, even though in the short term they might be a little bit oversold or undervalued. But long term, there's certainly going to be some pain, needs to be some shrinkage going on in that industry. And then other areas of REITs have their own pros and cons. So make sure you do your research, understand what you're buying, and hopefully you can find a sector and the best of breed within that attractive sector within the REIT space. So hope that gives you a good rundown on how to invest in REITs. Now, investing in today's very complex world is a huge topic, and we try to help you understand the basics. And occasionally we can get into the finer points, but we try to focus on the practical and what might be useful to the everyday tax-paying people like us. And when it comes right down to it, the average investor does pretty poorly, generally. And why is that? Well, three reasons that most individuals, investors, fail is because poor timing, first of all, they chase returns, right? Buy what's been doing well, even though it's expensive, right? They tend to avoid or ignore the valuations. And that might be good in the short term due to momentum, but they tend to hold on too long, and eventually that overvaluation corrects itself, and then they get out at a loss. And then, you know, they sell low. So they buy high, sell low. Right. Number two is the inability to maintain the strategy during down periods. Right. You like a name, you like an industry, and you like it as long as it's going up and making you money. But when it starts going down, you just sell, even though the long-term thesis behind that investment still makes sense. So how do you break the ranks of the average investor and give yourself a chance to succeed? Now, the answer is have an investment philosophy. Be among the very few investors who says, have an investment philosophy that that writes it down, right? There's very few that actually do that. They say it out loud, they write it down, they execute it. Understand what market corrections bring, what that means for your style of investing. And when your style of investing becomes unpopular, right? Value investing over the past 5 or 6 years has become unpopular. And these things tend to go in waves, both to the upside and the downside. Even the best strategies out there come in and out of favor. And usually most people chase the latest fad. You know, we've talked about over-indexing in this environment. Talked about over-allocation to high-flying, exciting growth names. And you're starting to see that kind of flip a little bit, right? You're seeing a lot of growth names really struggle over the past 3 or 4 months. And that's just a sign that the pendulum is swinging back to value investing. And it can be difficult when your strategy isn't working as well, right? You're not keeping up with the market. But if that's a strategy that is right for your investment time frame, for your needs, for your skill set to execute, then why would you step outside of your comfort zone? Now, it doesn't mean you can't deploy multiple strategies and have a little bit of this, a little bit of that within your portfolio. In fact, there's probably a strong argument for that. But you need to make sure you can execute well on whatever strategy you are deploying is. And you've written down, the strategy I'm looking for is this and that because of these reasons, and this is how I'm going to execute on it. I'm buying these companies or these funds that are in line with that strategy. And one thing to keep in mind is that market volatility is normal. It's normal for the stock market to fall 15 or 20%. I know it doesn't seem like that because of the Bernanke put that was evident for years, meaning that if the market falls, the Fed was always going to step in. But in a normal market environment, 15, 20% sell-off is common. Sometimes 30, 40% happens, right? Full-on bear market and recession. For individual companies, down 40% from a peak in any given year, certainly more the norm than not the norm, especially when you start digging into mid-cap, small-cap names. Often that decline comes after a big ascent in a particular sector or stock, right? Could be disappointing earnings. And sometimes it's not apparent for reasons at all. It's just the ebb and flow of sentiment within the market. So understand this volatility, plan on it, and know how to react. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Steve is visiting with listeners and clients in the San Jose area today, reviewing their retirement portfolios. And as always, Invest Talk is live, 4 to 5 Pacific time. And this show is for you. This hour is for you. So give us a call at 888-99-CHART. It's how to get through. So let's talk about your money on Invest Talk. Let's go to Glenn in San Mateo. How you doing, Glenn?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call.
You
guys do a great job and service to your show, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for calling. We appreciate our listeners.
Yeah, a question for you is LCI Lynette
okay.
Company, pharmaceutical. They just came out with earnings today, or this after the close.
Mm.
And I've been holding this position, and I've got a good size position there. Question is, with the earnings that they came out with this afternoon, what should I be doing?
Do you know if they beat, or I didn't see what happened exactly. Do you know?
I think they beat by a penny, and I believe they pretty much hit their numbers. It's kind of been kind of a up and down. You know, they've come a long ways downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty much at the close to the 52-week low.
Yep.
And I've just been wondering whether I should be hanging on to these guys or what I should be doing with the outlook. The outlook looks like they will be doing better than the norm, I guess.
Okay. Well, this is in the generic drug sector, and there have been a lot of companies within the space that have been hit hard on the pricing pressure that's happening within the sector. There's a lot of consolidation within the pharmacy benefit management area, and that has allowed them to exert pricing power over a lot of these generic drug companies. Now, one thing I like about them is that they don't have a ton of debt, right? They still have a good amount of debt, about 800 net, about, let's see, what's that, $750 million. But their EBIT is about $143 million, so they have sufficient cash flow. So it's certainly one of the lower risk names in the sector, which I like. It's certainly high risk because you don't know where this is all going to settle out with the industry. But I like that they have a moderate amount of debt, and so to me, this is probably one of my favorite names within the sector. But it's still high risk. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Now, is your ETF battle tested? That's our main talking point today, but I have some others as well. One has to do with the housing report that came out today. What did that look like? Where was their strength? Where was their weakness? What does that mean for the overall economy? Also, Your bond fund could be riskier than it looks. I know bonds can be boring, but for a lot of our listeners out there, they may be invested in bond funds in their IRA, 401k, maybe if you're a retiree or using bond funds for income. Certainly in this environment, everyone's looking for more income and people are stretching into riskier areas of the marketplace. And just because you're not seeing risk now doesn't mean it's not showing up. So we're going to talk about that. And lastly, manufacturing production. What is that looking like in the overall economy? So that's what's on my mind. But first, let's take a quick review of today's market. Now, we had the S&P down 8, the NASDAQ down 19, and the Dow down 87. Certainly a weak market after a strong bounce yesterday. There was some optimism over the fact that Trump got rid of Steve Bannon, pivoted to more of a mainstream cabinet, even though he still needs to fill a lot of the positions within the White House. And that's, I think, part of the reason why not a lot of things have gotten done. And there was a balance yesterday based also on tax reform hope, and I think that's so misguided. We're so far off from getting anything, any tax-related legislation done. It's so stupid to even talk about. And anytime you hear that in the market, they're just using that as a headline excuse for why anything went up or the market went up. Now, I still think, like I said on Monday, we're in the midst of a fall in the market. How long and large that will be, it's hard to know exactly. But I do think we'll see most of that between now and sometime in October or November, and then we'll see how strong the Christmas rally is. Risk is certainly high in today's market. The Trump administration is having a lot of trouble focusing on getting things done. And the hope of policy that would be favorable for the economy seems to be very hard to get past. Healthcare, which is probably the simplest of them all, even though it's not simple. Don't get me wrong. I know healthcare is complex, but it's probably the simplest and quickest way to get a policy win, and he still he's had trouble getting that done. So I don't want to be political and say whether that's good or bad, you know, whether you can blame him or not, but the fact is nothing's really getting passed, and the hopes are, I think, starting to wane, at least for 2017, that it'll actually have any major policy passed to help the economy and hope for a better business environment. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hey guys, I love the show. I had a quick question about a stock, Momo, M-O-M-O. It took a drop recently and it seems like it might be a good value. It's already recovered a little bit and I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on it. Thanks, I'll listen on the podcast.
All right, he's looking at Momo Inc. This is a Chinese provider of mobile-based social networking platform with 81 million active users. It's gone up dramatically from March of last year at about $8 a share, hit a 52-week high of $47 a share, 46 and change. Now we're at 36 and change, about 21% off its 52-week high. Now they're finally making money after a few years of not making money, although this is a Chinese company, so are they being honest about that? It's hard to always know, so there's certainly high risk when it comes to that. Revenue is up 215%, but that's a slowdown from just a few quarters ago when revenue was up 524%, and I think it's one of the reasons why the stock has gone down a little bit recently is because of that earnings slowdown and revenue slowdown. And you can see that's why the stock has gone down so much. But it's still, I don't think, a good value at these levels. You still have an enterprise value to EBITDA of 22. I would I would like to get this more in the 20s, and I would say the low 20s before I would pick up Momo. Let me give you a real level on this. I'm going to go. It isn't a support here, around $35, so you could see some small bounces, but ultimately I do think this goes lower, and I think this goes lower into at least the $32 level, but I think $27.50 is a great place where I would pick up Momo. That was Momo Inc., a Chinese provider of mobile-based social networking. Now we're at the halfway mark. We're open to any money questions right now. This show is for you, so give us a call. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
We continue with our podcast today. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and Active 401k. Active 401k enables employees to make smarter choices in their employers' 401ks. So if you're frustrated by your 401k performance and your limited time to do research, Active 401k might be just the solution for you. It gives you a way to maximize your account. It may be just what you've needed. It ranks your current options within your employer's plan, and all you do then is log in and make the changes. And we'll tell you what to buy and what percentages and what funds. This program is offered by invitation to KPP clients and a limited number of our InvestTalk listeners. And if you'd like to see more about it, just go to investtalk.com when you're ready and click on the Investments tab and then look for Active 401k. Now let's continue with the podcast. You're listening to Invest Talk. We're glad you're with us today. Financial advisor Justin Klein is ready for your money question right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, many market watchers, including myself, fear that ETFs are becoming inherently risky for a couple reasons. One has to do with the tremendous tide of inflow switching from actively managed mutual funds to passive indexed ETFs. And that's mainly happened over the past decade or so. And this seems very similar to kind of like I've talked before about the Nifty 50 in the late 60s, kind of a zombie mantra that just indexing is all you need to do. And this is pushing everybody into a very crowded trade of just investing in indexes. Now, the popularity of ETFs have also created the second fear, which is hundreds of relatively new, smaller, and untested ETFs that may become even more dislocated than your average ETF in a down market. Now, last year there were about 225 new ETFs launched. 2015, there were 250 new ETFs launched. So we're starting to see a little bit of a decline. There hasn't been actually a ton this year through the first half. So it's showing you that it's kind of slowing down a little bit. You're seeing a oversupply of ETFs in the marketplace. They've kind of covered all the bases, right? Now, the overwhelming majority of ETF assets are allocated to strategies or indexes that go beyond 10 years. So they have a track record that goes past the financial crisis, many that were launched around 2000, right? The Russell 2000 IWM was launched around then. The S&P 500 by iShares IVV was launched around then. So there's a lot of ETFs that have a lot of seasoning, right? That have been around through ups and downs. so you understand how they react in a down market. So that's something you should always understand and consider, the type of risk that you're taking, by looking back. What happened between 2007 and 2009? Did it go down 10%? Did it go down 30%? Did it go down 60%? Are you aware of the risks that you're taking with a particular exposure in an index? And if you aren't, then maybe you're taking too much risk. Right, the J&K, which is the S Spiders Barclays High Yield Bond Fund, that went from about 48 all the way down to a low of 26. So it shows you what type of volatility high yield bonds can have. Are you prepared for that? Do you understand that? Do you understand the risks in today's market? And we're going to get to that a little bit more later in the show about the risks in your bond fund. Now, if you're a podcast listener, you're welcome to all call during our 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time hour. You can use our anytime line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll answer your question on the next Invest Talk.
Hey, Steve, Justin. This is Frank from Portland, Oregon. I have a question regarding Teva. Been watching the news, and it seems like there's some violations now with the company, so I'd like to hear what your take on the stock. I'm still holding on to my shares and try to see what to do, what my next move is going to be. Thanks again for your show, and hopefully that my question will make it on the air. Thanks again. Bye.
All right. Well, we sold Teva today. It was broke. It looked like it was trying to find support, and yesterday it broke that support. So we decided to get out and take our money and move it elsewhere, because I do think it's going to be a while before the final shakeout in the generic drug industry is figured out. The ability to pay down that debt is figured out, and the restructuring of their business is figured out. So, you know, could we have a rally from here? Possible, but I think it will likely stay between the kind of the 15 and 20, you know, the 10, and it's called the $10 and $20 level for a while before things finally get shaken out and they get a new CEO, and they're certainly under a lot of pressure. And unfortunately, it's one of those names that we missed on. You know, we missed on it. It's unfortunate, but those things happen, and that's why you stay diversified within a portfolio. That was Teva Pharmaceuticals, T-E-V-A, Teva, Teva, whatever you want to call it. Now here at KPP, investment program, there may be an investment program that may suit you. It's called the Active 401k. It's a new system that can help meet a serious challenge for the average investor and how to make informed choices within the limits of an employer's plan. So if you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Investments tab, and look for Active 401k.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Yes, this is Tom in Kentucky. I was wondering about B&G Foods, Inc., BGS. Bought some about 2.5 months ago, and it's down 14% since then. And I still like the dividend, and I still like the company. Is this a good time to pick up more, or should I wait? Thank you.
I do think it is. We own B&G Foods. We've owned it for a few years now. Picked it up, I believe, a little bit below this. Wrote it up, wrote it down, but collecting the nice 5.8% dividend since then. And, there's a lot of negative news and negative sentiment around the industry, but they have some great brands and a strong history of good performance, of being able to buy good brands, build them, or bring them into their distribution system. They own a lot of great brands like Pirate's Booty, and a few other ones as well. And so we like B&G Foods, so we're a fan of it. Certainly higher risk than the average within the sector, because it's kind of a smaller company, $2 billion market cap. But it's one of those names that we really like, and I do think it is a pretty good time to pick it up. 8899 chart, 8899-2-4278. Let's go. Let's talk about some economic news that came out today. New home sales. Now, they've been on a relatively steady but modest rise over the last 5 or 6 years or so, since 2011. But there are some headwinds that have knocked down sales recently. One are just high home prices that that's making affordability stretched. You have interest rates that are now a little bit higher than they were just a year ago. And that caused new home sales to fall 9.4% in July. That's following an upward revised 630,000 units in June. So 571,000 in July, 630,000 in June. And there wasn't an expectation of a big number, but expectations were no change, right? A flat month growth-wise, and it was actually down 9.4%. And so new home sales are now at the lowest level since December, when it was 548,000, and are off to a very slow start for the third quarter. And the first quarter was 617,000 on average per month. Second quarter was 613,000 per month. And now the first month of the third quarter was only 571. So you're seeing a pretty decent slowdown in demand for new homes. And new homes are very important as an economic driver. And why is that? It's about 3.8% of GDP, residential construction is. And the reason is because it contributes to a lot of types of jobs, construction jobs, a lot more than existing homes, right? And existing homes, you get some GDP from commissions paid, some work on the homes to get it up to speed to sell, or new buyers going in and renovating the home, etc., buying furniture for the home. So there's some economic drivers there, but it's a much bigger driver for home builders to build a home from the ground up. So that's why new home sales are very important for the overall economy. Now, three of the four U.S. regions registered declines in July. Midwest was the only area to post a gain. They climbed from 69,000 sales from 65,000. The West was down huge, from 144,000 sales to 39,000. Big, big drop. That was really where it was concentrated. South fell from 326,000 fell 1,000 from 326,000. And Northeast declined 10,000 to only 32,000. Now, there's inventories rose from about 5.2 months of supply to 5.8. And you're starting to get bumping up against where you're starting to see an oversupply of new homes. It's not there yet, but we're kind of now in the middle range, where for many months and many years, we were kind of undersupply of new homes. And now the median price rose, 6.3% year over year, but it only climbed about 0.7% month over month. And as I talked about before, mortgage rates are about 50 basis points higher than they were a year ago, and that's certainly pressuring affordability. So that's kind of the rundown of the new home report today, and that needs to kind of turn around for things to for the economy to remain on the right trajectory. There is another Invest Talk term you should know and understand. Term is quantitative easing, and in today's world of central banking and dominance of central banking, quantitative easing has been used by all of the major central banks. Our central bank, the Fed, which no longer is doing QE, but There are other central banks like the Bank of Japan that is doing massive QE, even bigger than what we did. And the ECB, the European Central Bank, is continuing to do lots of QE. And it's an unconventional monetary policy in which central banks print money out of thin air to purchase government securities or other securities from the market in order to lower interest rates and increase the money supply. Right? They create money out of thin air. They go out there and they buy assets in the system, hold it on their balance sheet, and guess what? That money is new out there in the marketplace, and then whoever owns those assets either spends it or invests it or does something with that money to earn a return or put it out there in the economy instead of just holding that asset, right? Because an asset being held is just simply not creating any economic activity. Now, quantitative easing is considered when short-term interest rates are at or approaching zero. Okay, and it doesn't involve printing new banknotes. It's not like the printing press is physically being printed, but it is in practice, you know, it is creating new money. So it is creating new money out of thin air. Now, you can see this definition on investopedia.com. So I hope that helped give you a little background in today's market.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program, but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask. It's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Corey from Mesa. I had a question about target prices. If a stock is 80, an analyst says, oh, we have a target price of 105. When is that target price? Is it a year from now? Is it 6 months from now? Is it 3 months from now? Thanks for the help.
All right, well, the answer is usually it's a year out. It's usually they have a one-year target price, typically. That's not hard and fast, not always that way, but that's typically what they're talking about. With that being said, I would completely, absolutely, 100% ignore the target price from analysts. Analysts are the only value I see in analysts are earnings. Right, future earnings, what the expectations are, even though they're going to be wrong about that, at least they give you a general idea of where earnings, sales, etc. are going to go in the future. And that's what you should be considering, is what's going to happen going forward with that particular company, not what has happened in the past. Okay, so you want to take those earnings projections and then analyze them on their own merit. Based on where historical valuations are for the company, for the industry, market trends, the trends for that individual stock. Analysts have no better clue than you do or I do on where the company will be a year from now, price-wise. They might have a better idea of where earnings might be, but that has only a small correlation with where actually the price will be going forward. If the market pulls back and drops, you go into a bear market, odds are any cyclical name is going to follow that. And vice versa, you have a strengthening economy, any cyclical name is going to strengthen probably beyond any target price. So bottom line is, use analysts for earnings and sales projections, not for price targets. You're listening to Invest Talk. We're here for you. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. Give us a call. We have 5 minutes left, so if you're going to call, do it now. Now, is your bond fund riskier than it looks? Now, if you understand the bond market and credit spreads, you'll understand that credit spreads are very tight, which means the premium or the yield that you're getting to invest in high-yield bonds, high-yield corporate bonds, compared to treasuries, which are risk-free, high-yield bonds are high-risk, is very low. You're not getting a lot of return. And in periods of economic weakness, high yield bonds have experienced elevated default levels, along with sharp sell-offs in indexes and any funds in the high yield or junk bond space. There's also other types of funds like local currency emerging market bonds who have experienced large volatility swings during times when emerging market currencies are weak compared to the dollar. Also, long duration treasury funds, right? Long-term government bond funds, they're highly sensitive to changes in interest rates. Now, we don't necessarily need to see volatility to show up in these sectors to know that they are risky. All you have to do is look at the fund's credit quality or currency exposure or duration exposure. And that will give you the same information about these specific risks. Now, if you take a look at these different sectors of the market leading up to the financial crisis, the 5 years leading up to it, and the 5 years after, you'll see that bank loan funds, high yield bond funds, they were very, very high risk before the financial crisis, but you wouldn't see that at that time because the standard deviation, the volatility, was relatively low. And it exploded during the financial crisis, whereas your short and intermediate term bond funds, government bond funds, their volatility didn't really move much at all. So the high yield and bank loan funds went from the best performing funds before the financial crisis leading up to it, the 5 years before, and they were the worst performing the 5 years during and post. So risk isn't just what happened in the market, it's what could have happened but didn't. You understand that? So just because volatility hasn't happened in your bond fund yet doesn't mean you aren't taking those risks. So you need to understand what type of risks you are taking when you're trying to chase yield in a fund or an individual bond or an individual stock even. And given the strong multi-year run in the riskier sectors of the market, it's more important than ever to remember that observed volatility alone in the market won't warn you about the risks that are coming. Now let's give the last word today to Matt in Walnut Creek, who called our... Oh, we don't have time. I'm sorry, I was too verbose when it came to the bond funds. So, but hopefully that helps some people and gives you an idea of how to refocus on what those risks are. Is it credit risk? Is it duration risk? Is it currency risk that is threatening your income, right? Because you can get nice 5-6% yield on a bond fund, but if it goes down 20%, in a recession, what good is that? Right? I'm talking about the value of the bond, not the income, but the value of that fund going down 20%. Time is up for the hour. Reminder, no matter where you live in the U.S. or around the world, you can avail yourself of a free retirement account analysis. It's really very easy to set up, so why not give yourself every possibility to succeed? Find out more about this informal process, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, and for Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family. Thank you for being with us. Join us for the next Invest Talk tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.